which of the guests that we've had, specifically guests under 30, because I feel like it's a little bit tougher playing the comparison game, would you say is most likely to become a billionaire at some point in their life, and why? You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast.
Weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
All right. Episode number 100. Never thought we'd see the day. Fun fact. Apparently, if you guys know Seth Godin, who's like big in the marketing community, he has a rule. I don't know if he still follows this rule. This rule came out like 5 years ago. That if any podcast ever hits 100 episodes, he would go and be a guest on it. Do you know that?
I had no idea. Yeah. Now I'm confused why we don't have him lined up for next week.
Well, we haven't hit 100 yet. But honestly, I think that's a pretty good rule. I feel like every like 3 to 4 months, I'll like make a tweet. Be like, hey, here's some of the cool shit I do. Who has a podcast that I can like go on? Because I find that like, A, I just like going on other people's podcasts. It helps me get better at telling my story. But then also, like, you just meet so many people and you grow your own podcast that way. Because it kind of like cross pollinates listeners a little bit. But like,
I think for him though, it's a big filter. I think podcasting has probably been one of the most consistent things we've done over the past 2 years, right? They're like, we haven't even lived in the same spot, or like, it's definitely the most consistent part of, I think, our life at this point. But it's also been actively tuned that way, where we travel with microphones and we travel and kind of build it around making sure we can publish and record these episodes. So I think for him, it's a pretty big filter. I wouldn't be surprised if there were statistics on average podcast length, or I bet you a lot of people do 10 episodes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I think there is. I also think that specifically like the ones I've gone on, like the guy's like, oh, we have one episode out. Like, we're going to air the rest of them. And I'm like, I've done them before. And then afterwards I'm like, well, no one hit me up afterwards. I don't need a reward or anything, but like, I want to know that this time wasn't totally wasted across 27 views. So I feel like
this just have been a phone call with the guy on the other line.
Yeah. At that point, it's like, we didn't have to record this, dude. Like, I understand like your friends listen to it. It's cool. But like, we should have just done this as a phone call, which is tough too. Cause now that we have like a bunch of episodes, it's like, we were probably like that too in the first like 10 episodes, mm-hmm. like trying to get bigger guests. But either way, I think the 100 episodes kind of like adds credibility. And then you can also like name drop a bunch of other random guests that you've had on in the past too.
Also, for anyone that might be watching the video here, I think I have the better sweatshirt going on right now. Big, big rivalry this morning on Connor copying my sweatshirt for the episode. So please call in and let us know who's got the better one.
I have the D2C sweetheart of Cuts, who, if you're a guy between the age of 20 to 30, that's going to be the only ad that you'll have on Instagram this holiday season, at least based on last year. And Gio has Lululemon, so he's just a little out of trend now. But okay. All right. Let's jump into the actual episode now that I've gotten that point out. Big thing here is we weren't really sure where to go and take this episode. Both of our minds was like, let's go and like mash up a bunch of clips from like the last 100 episodes. And then we're like, that just sounds like way too much work. So we're going to do more of like a Q&A style for this episode. I think it'll be kind of cool. If you're new to the podcast, you can probably get some cool ideas of like other episodes to listen to of like guests that are interesting. I feel like the worst part about podcasts by far is like, I find a new podcast, I'm like, cool, what's the best other episodes? And Spotify and Apple both do not have a filter by download feature, which sucks.
Which is actually wild. Why does that not exist?
Like
popular episodes. If you go on Spotify for music, it'll often sort by like plays.
Yeah, but like they'll actually literally show the downloads by song. No, the hack for it is just go on YouTube if the podcast is big enough. And usually the views of that podcast correlate to the downloads of that podcast. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree, but like it's a weird hack. I don't know, even like so many other things is like, if you're watching a Netflix show, you're normally not starting with the most recent episode. It's a bit different with podcasts, but
I know it sucks.
We're gonna write someone a strongly worded email.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, but so we're basically going to go through, we just made like a bunch of random questions and thoughts on like what we've learned from doing 100 episodes. Also like the people that we think are like, we've just met a lot of dope people during this podcast. Like who would we bet on? Who do we think is going to fail? That like we might not actually want to say publicly, but fuck it. It's entertainment. It can be kind of fun. And yeah, I don't know. Just a bunch of other random questions. So I'll kick things off. I'll throw it over to you. And we can kind of just go and play this game until we get repetitive, and then we'll just kill it on the mic. But the first question I threw together was, which of the guests that we've had, specifically guests under 30, because I feel like it's a little bit tougher playing the comparison game. Mm-hmm. Would you say is most likely to become a billionaire at some point in their life, and why?
Yeah, I think as a side note there, if I had to guess, I think the wealthiest people on the podcast are probably all the older real estate guys, but I think that's kind of a given. I think a couple people came up. How old was Colin? Was Colin under 30? Colin Landforce?
I think he's like 30, 32, 33.
Yeah, okay. So I think he was slightly over. But I think still shouting out him, I thought that was really interesting, super unique because his company's public, it's Canadian. I think that gives you a lot more kind of liquidity in terms of net worth valuation if it blows up. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. So you would put him over like a bunch of other people, because I'll be honest, when I went through the list, like, don't get me wrong, I think Colin has a lot of money. If the context is like a 9-figure net worth, I would, or no, 10-figure net worth.
So right? I'd Sam Thompson on my I think would be another one I pulled out there. It's tough though. I feel like he does a lot of stuff kind of in the background. I think he's got so many things going on where Sam. Tell us exactly how much money you're making and what you're doing.
I think Sam is sneakily one of the more well-off people, but I would be curious. God, we got to get him back on the podcast. If I had to guess, I don't even think he would want to. Maybe I'm so wrong about that. I just think he's got like a cool lifestyle with like his girlfriend plays like professional ice hockey. He like chills. He like just like throws together no code software apps, flips them for like 100, 200 grand. Like, I'm curious if he's going to like shift that mindset over to being more like, no, like let's play like the really big game. And not saying that he doesn't do big stuff now. Like, I think he does have several businesses that make, you know, several million a year. I would be curious if he like wants to shift that mindset into like go growth mode. Cause I feel like this question, the way I'm interpreting this question is like, you kind of have to just sacrifice a ton of shit to get to that $1 billion mark. I don't think a lot of people can get there if they want to do like a fun, cool lifestyle and start businesses. I think you kind of have to like put a lot of shit aside.
Who comes to mind? Flipping the question over to you.
Oh, I have two. The first is Cody Davis, because I think he just genuinely wants to. That was episode like 20 or 21. This kid is like...
Sorry, keep going.
He's also my answer for bankruptcy.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, because one of my questions was like, who, you know, if you had to pick someone... A side note, interesting point. We did have a guest that did go bankrupt, which I thought was a super unique perspective on that. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right? It goes hand in hand. If you're going to be super levered up and make a ton of money, also a real estate guy, but yeah.
Yeah. And hungry. I will say like that episode too, like, I don't think Cody listens to this podcast. If he does, what's up, Cody? Like, I think you'll be a billionaire out of most of these people. Because I think he wants to, he like talked it through, but like, we were also weren't even going to air that episode. Cause after listening to it, I was like, it was kind of just mundane, a little bit like slow, like not really entertaining. But we aired it mostly because I want to be like, when he does become a billionaire, like, oh yeah, we got him when he was young. But anyway, that was like over a year and a half ago. So I would say Cody, just because he takes just an absurd amount of risk. And I'll be very curious to see where he is 2 years from now. But the other piece is that like, he wants it. Like, that dude's entire personality is driven around real estate, for better or worse. And so I think to get to that level, you kind of have to be obsessed about that stuff. The other person that I think will get there, and this is just kind of based on like rough numbers from what I've seen online, Mike Martocci. I think he falls in that same category of like, I think he wants to do it. I think he rolls with like some of the bigger guys down in Miami. Like, I think I'm pretty sure he's friends with like the Keith Raboys and like those kind of guys of the world. And like the rough math that I would think of right now is I'm pretty sure his company, if he wanted to sell it today, he could probably sell it for like $50 or $60 million. They do, I want to say, in like the 40 to 50 million in sales, but I think his company is probably worth like 50 million. The math, and he's 27, 28, something like that. I don't think he raised outside capital. I think this entire thing has been bootstrapped. He might have recently raised a tiny bit of money, but I think it's mostly bootstrapped. My thought is like, if he keeps growing at this rate, builds out his team, he can probably sell it for 100 million in the next 2 to 3 years. And then like, in my mind, he's smart enough and driven enough to like keep going with it. But let's say that he wants to just go and play a really safe and boring game. Let's say he sells it for 100 million. He pays off some people. He pays taxes, all of that kind of stuff. He ends up with like, I don't know, call it 40 million. Maybe that number is a little bit wrong, but like, that's what I would roughly assume he would end up with it afterwards at that sale price. You can literally just invest that into like an index fund for 40 years, 8%. That brings you to like 900 million in 40 years. Like, it's actually
I think it's so the index perspective is really good, but I think it's so difficult for someone that was able to make this much money actively running a business. There's no way he would ever take that money, I don't think. But it's a good perspective of like, yeah, your passive option is a wild amount of money in 40 years.
Right. So that's my point too, is that I don't think he would do it. I just think that if my assumptions are correct with his business, what it's worth, and if he ever wanted to sell it in the next couple of years, I think it would be, he would have to actively really fuck up to not be a billionaire, is kind of more my point.
It will be interesting though too, like we've just been through a wild bull market for the past 10 years. Everyone we interviewed has only had that perspective. You and I have kind of only grown up in this sort of environment where for the most part, if you're doing something successful, by default, it's going to grow every year. Not really picking his out, but I think it'll be really interesting to, you know, hopefully we don't run out of guests in the next couple of years because the market turns so bad.
Next thing you know, like episode 157, this kid just got the best internship at Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, so I think it'll be an interesting time to kind of see who lasts. And I think we've had some pretty interesting pivots as well, with like Brian has gone, not necessarily fully pivoted, but you always talk about VAs and outsourcing. Yeah. Where now he's just kind of pivoted into that, seems to take up a significantly larger chunk of his time. And I'm assuming he's probably making some good money there, because we've heard, you know, a lot of friends that have used the service and recommend it.
Yeah. So for context, for anyone who doesn't know who Brian Solentrop, I believe is how you pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
Went from like a janitorial commercial cleaning business, I think he probably made a couple hundred thousand a year doing it, to now he's helping small businesses outsource operations over to the Philippines and hiring VAs and kind of taking more of like a headhunter model. I mean, in my mind, that just makes sense. Like he has a way bigger total addressable market. He's built himself up a bit of an audience on Twitter over the last couple of years. So like he's gotten to this point where it's like he can help small local businesses outsource tasks that would have otherwise required a $15 an hour labor in North Carolina, where I think he's from. And instead you can get that for like $4-$5, right? Overseas. So yeah, I definitely think that he's had some good pivots too.
Who do you think in general, other than, because it's tough, I think we've interviewed a couple of really, really big real estate guys that are older. So other than them, who do you think is someone that we've interviewed that has either the largest company from a enterprise value or maybe cash flow perspective?
So is this, because we, for audience reference, we were texting each other questions back and forth before this. Is this the same? And I wrote down an answer for the question of who has the most money overall. Is that the same question? Or are you talking about specifically businesses?
I don't know. I just written down, like, I'm curious who has the largest company that we've interviewed.
All right. You say your answer first, because I have to go through some of these and I'm not really sure.
I don't know. One that comes out, back to Colin, maybe, in terms of the weed stuff. I remember in the beginning,
I have an answer.
50 million plus a year in D2C things. So from a cash flow standpoint, that's really, really high.
Yeah.
Or I guess from a revenue standpoint.
I think it's got to be Xavier Helgeson, right? Enduring Ventures.
What episode?
That was episode 70. No, 79.
He has a bunch of stuff.
They do 100 million plus a year in revenue on their businesses. Yep. And I think that guy is ridiculously smart. Okay, that actually slightly changes my other answer too, then, because so you're talking about enterprise value. I'm talking about like personal net worth. My answer was going to be like a dark horse. Well, yeah, but like it's blurred, because it's like if you sell it, then it's your personal net worth. I feel like you have to have some kind of liquidation event. It's really tough. My overall most money answer is definitely going to be a dark horse of like an episode that did well, but like I don't think it gets talked about enough. Like Ben Jabali, he had like a 9-figure exit, like absolutely crushed. I know he had investors and stuff like that too. So maybe, I don't know what his bottom line looked like on it, but I think he definitely crushed it there as well.
Or I bet Jason Yanowitz, secret, he's probably got some secret cryptos backed up from Blockworks.
Yeah,
like it's possible he has a bunch of stuff that he's owned forever, at least been in the industry, where
you just get a few small wins and you're just like, oh, sick, that turned into $1 million. Okay, wait, hold on. Here's a good one that I feel like is slightly different from just like the dick swinging contest of like who has the most and biggest stuff. And I texted you this. I said, if you had $100,000 to give to a guest and you're just like, dude, I just want $200,000 back in the next year, figure it out.
I think that's a significantly more difficult question. I'm curious if that's how you meant it. Like, that's a lot different than, okay, giving someone $100,000 and who's going to make the most money with it.
Right. No. I specifically want, like, I want somebody, and I, it sounds stupid to call 100% of return a single, but like, I want somebody to add a single. I want somebody to go out, here's 100,000, give me back 200,000. Like,
maybe throw in a, not kind of a wild card. I feel like someone like Quinn Miller with vending machines, just keep it super simple. Yeah. Stocking up the vending machines. He's got the cash flow. Like, if that's all you're looking for, the odds that, I don't know, I don't really know what happens to vending machines during a recession, but probably some sort of consistency there.
Vending machines during a recession probably crush.
I would assume so, right? Like, really
buying up all the liquor stores during the recession. That's what I want to know. Because like, the only thing that does well in both bull markets and bear markets is alcohol. So random side note, I saw some thing the other day about how like no one our age supposedly drinks, which I think concerns the hell out of me because it puts us in this weird like top 1% category, I believe.
But what about us and all of our friends?
that's my point. It's like, because we just live in this bubble where everyone drinks a lot. But I saw this stat where like, it's like nobody drinks. And it's like, you do realize if people stop drinking, there's going to be no nice restaurants anymore. Like, nice restaurants, all of their profit comes from like fancy cocktails. So like, if people stop drinking, have fun not going to nice restaurants anymore. I was like, oh shit, we gotta start a trend. We gotta like get people back on to drinking.
Yeah, but they have the non-alcoholic cocktails now, which I thought was pretty interesting. The first time I've ever really looked at one on the menu, went to Bolden Acres last weekend, and they have a cool, like, you scan their QR code and there's some sort of, it's like an app that opens up without downloading it. I don't know, whatever software they use is really cool.
What would you spend, $15 on that?
Well, no, but they had a get $8 off your tab if you order one of these non-alcoholic beverages to some extent. So I thought that was an interesting pitch, but no, I don't know. Like, I'm also probably not the best demographic for it because I just drink water and coffee 99% of the time.
Right. Yeah, I would just be curious because I feel like with the alcohol stuff, like, you're paying the $15 not for the taste but for the benefit, right? And so like, you essentially need some other like benefit.
Yeah, but you're also overpaying for the alcohol,
yeah,
as well, right? Like, alcohol doesn't cost $15 for the cocktail.
No, of course.
Would you pay for to go to a bar, hang out with people, and just drink fruit juice the entire time?
Absolutely.
I think that's a tough one to spin.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Anyway, let's go back to this original question because I have such a good answer for it. 100,000 to 200,000. You said Quinn Miller. All right. I have somebody who's going to come back on the podcast this week, John Rivera.
Okay. Good answer.
1,000% John Rivera. So this kid, for anyone who's listening, when he's like 22, 23, he just built like a $5 million pest removal business for like a home service business. And then in the past like month, this past week, he sent me a text. It was a Facebook listing of a storage facility for sale. I was like, it was like way too small. I didn't even send it to you, Gio, because it was like 25 units or something like that. Like very, very tiny. But I was like, oh, dude, like, thanks so much for sending this. Like, love the fact that like you're searching around Facebook for deals right now. Like, too small for me, but like, if you want to go for it, I'll like talk you through how we think about it. And then I go, have you been buying some stuff off Facebook? And he goes, this is literally the text. He goes, I've bought two homes off of Facebook, which have both been killer deals. Facebook is a gold mine. By the way, I want to go on another podcast. Superior Attic did $2 million in the first year, and I'm barely running it right now. So Superior Attic is this business that he started like less than 12 months ago when Gio and I first met him down in Fort Worth.
Which on that, we get lunch with him. He's talking about how he just sold his first company. He's gone, like, he just hit a home run, made a bunch of money. I'm like, oh, like, what were you doing today? He's like, oh, like, starting my other company.
Yeah, he was starting my second company. And then he literally, we were sitting at some bar and grill, whatever. He like pulls out his laptop. There's a spreadsheet of like 15 different companies, not companies, maybe like, I think, addresses. And he's like, oh yeah, we're 2 weeks in. I already have 15 clients. And then like, not even in a flexing way, because he's so matter of fact with it. And just like he's not trying to show off by any means. Then he like pulls up his, he like pulls out like three pieces of paper. I'm like, what are these? He's like, these are checks. And I'm looking at them. They're like $10,000, $20,000 checks. I'm like, fuck me. I was like, what are we doing? And so anyway, so he goes, sporadically 2 million the first year. I'm barely running right now. It's pretty passive. Also, I've started 2 new companies. Also, I'm buying real estate. These are like 4 separate texts. I was just like, would love to have you back on. Sounds like you're killing it. What are the new companies? And he goes, Superior Attic, Critic Command, New Jersey. So he started another one over in New Jersey, which he's based out of Texas, which is insane.
That'll be really interesting to talk about.
He goes, a lead gen company that does not have a name, but has 5 clients after the first week, and a roofing company out of Virginia. I'm advising for it and do not own any of. I'm confused by that last bit. Anyway. He's going to be back on the podcast this week, but like my favorite part about this entire text, aside from the fact that he's like 2 million pretty passive, is he goes, I have 5 clients in the first week and I don't have a company name. I'm like, that's the most baller thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's the opposite of what everyone else does, right? Everyone's stuck on the name for the first couple months and then has no clients.
John Rivera is easily my horse on the $100,000 to $200,000, like arguably my horse on like the $100,000 to like 1 million. I would just love to give this man all of my money if he would ever take it. But I
feel like he's a great example of someone where it's like, oh, I want to invest in a percentage of your future income or revenue, right? Like, here's X amount of money now, and I just want 5% of everything you make.
Yeah, seriously.
Every year going forward. Cause like, yeah, I would just bet on you to keep doing crazy, like scaled out local niche businesses, or maybe not even local.
Not even crazy stuff.
He's just like boring to some extent.
Yeah.
He picks all the really boring industries too, or at least he had in the past.
Yeah.
Of like pest control.
No, he's good. All right. I got another one. Biggest theme that you've seen, or that you've taken away from like some of the more high performing guests we have, because like by nature, I think most podcasts, right, the goal is to try to interview interesting, high performing people. You do enough of it, or you listen to enough of them, and you're like, here's the traits that you want, right? And I would love to know like less business like traits. I think half the reason we started this podcast is because most other business podcasts just are like, get good at managing, get good at hiring, and that'll solve all your issues, whatever. I would love to know like more like, oh shit, what makes these guys successful? Like, how are they so good at it?
I wish there was a less generic answer that I had for it, but like, I feel like everyone that's been super successful has just done a ton of reps for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like they haven't just tried one thing and failed and gone it. They've all failed at a bunch of stuff in the past for the most part. Again, another kind of a cliche answer, but there's probably a reason why it becomes a cliche answer. And they like, this is what they do in their free time. I think you generally have to have some sort of weird inability to relax and just try to work all the time. I don't know how that stands from a mental standpoint, but I think it's just the consistency. They're always trying something. They're always trying something new, building something, or at least consistent at what they've been doing. And that compounds, I think, significantly quicker down the road.
Two things there. One, the first is that I think because we're interviewing younger people, we have a natural somewhat bias on that. And not everyone we're interviewing anymore is young, but like the fact is, if you're doing like running $1 million plus company in your 20s, you probably started doing a lot of stuff when you were younger. So like, it kind of like gives you that, like we have like a natural bias in that tendency. I do agree that like almost nobody that we interviewed was their first thing, their most successful thing. And that's true for like, even just a lot of older entrepreneurs, even like the big guys, right? Like I think Bezos is maybe the only exception of that, who like this first company he started was like just a killer enterprise success.
But he's a maniac. So
yeah.
Different category.
But also, so on that point, this is not my answer. I have a slightly different answer. But on that point, because they started doing it so much younger, I think a huge advantage that they have that nobody really talks about is they probably skewed a lot of their friends around this idea of like either business or wanting to be a little more high performing and like focus on that stuff. And so when you go and like sacrifice time that you could have otherwise been spending, like, and I'm not saying like sacrifice fun things that you like to do, like Gio and I do plenty of that shit too, but like the idea of like not going to Thursday night football games and instead just being like, oh no, I have to like underwrite these 2 deals, or I have to go and like finish up this email workflow, or like I'd rather just spend this time, you know, my Friday night smoking and building a no code SaaS app, which like we've had plenty of guests, like I'm thinking of some specific people who would like spend their time doing that kind of stuff. It's so much more normalized because you don't have to deal with a friend group who's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're not coming out with us tonight. Like, and for what it's worth, we still go out a bunch, we get our shit done, like all of that. But I think that it's way easier when you've kind of set these habits from a way earlier age.
But it's also a perspective of when you surround yourself with people that are doing, it makes it a lot easier. It's like, oh, each one of my friends is doing X, Y, and Z. It's like these are options I have. I never realized that, right? Like if you just kind of grow up with a group of people that go the corporate route, and it becomes a significantly different perspective on what you realize or different opportunities you can have. Same thing growing up in like an entrepreneurial family, I think is a consistent theme we've seen as well with people.
The one of the entrepreneurial family is a big one.
I think I can guess what your actual answer is to this question, but I think you're gonna say something about
I think I know what you think I'm gonna say, and I'm gonna say something else. You think I'm gonna say the ability to figure things out.
No. I was gonna say they surround themselves with like really good peer and mentor groups.
Not what I was gonna say either. No, mine is they just have an incredibly high agency, I think is the term for it. Agency is essentially just the term that means like you feel like you are in control of all of your own decisions. Mm-hmm. And as such, you act accordingly. I think most people feel like, oh shit, well, like I can't make $200,000 a year because like I can't find somebody who's gonna go and pay me that much, right? And other people are like, let me figure out how to go and do that. And like having this like super high, I don't know if the grammatical way of saying it is a sense of agency or having agency. I don't know exactly what it would be, but like this idea that like you are in control of a lot of your shit, and like when things go wrong, it's your fault. When things go well, that you can influence that.
Would say though that I think that all these kind of go hand in hand with, you know, what comes first, chicken or the egg, in terms of, is it the people you surround yourself with that give you the confidence, or is it, you know, association bias because you have this sort of personalized or confidence that you can direct the things you do, that now you surround yourself with other people that also have that similar thing. I agree with you. Yeah.
But I also think that like, the thing that nobody talks about in all of this stuff is like parenting matters a lot, and like something that like just takes so for granted. But like people with fucked up parents, like it sucks. It's just a huge disadvantage, and I don't have a good answer, and I don't even want to get into it on this episode.
No, that's a fair point. A lot of variables that go into it, and you can do, you got to do the best you can. I kind of want to dive into, I know my answer right away.
I'm going to say the question first.
Most unique or interesting business we've come across.
Oh, mine's boring. I have a boring answer. It's just the Reg Seller one from last week.
Yeah, that was going to be mine. I thought it was so interesting because it was so different from almost everyone else we've done. It's either real estate, e-commerce, SaaS, but he's like, no, we're going to buy a bunch of big buildings that melt down metal. It would be cool to find more people like that, where like I really do like kind of the consistency in the people we have too, but I think it really throws an interesting perspective of like, you can do something entirely different, right? Like I think a lot of people sit down like, all right, I need to make money with the e-commerce company, mm-hmm. or these are my only options. So I thought it was a really cool perspective.
I agree. I think it makes for more entertaining content too, from a podcast point of view, but I will say like, the fact is you can probably turn around tomorrow and to some degree start the most generic business in the world if they're big enough to market, or if the competitors are shit enough, and still make money off of it. Like the only thing that I would say is like the unique stuff is cool and it's entertaining. And I like listening about it too, because I'm like, oh shit, like I never like looked at that metal pole outside and thought, who's making that kind of stuff? But also like you don't have to reinvent the wheel to make a shit ton of money is like, I feel like one of my biggest takeaways too.
Yeah, but I think like it's a great example of like, this is like lawn. I don't know, I forgot what the example was that he told us, was some sort of like statue thing or whatever. But yeah, it's just metal and they're making what, 30 plus million a year?
Yeah, they crush. They absolutely crush.
Boring, and boring is not necessarily bad.
Yeah. All right, I got one here that is, which one should we do? Okay. Biggest personal lesson that you've taken from running the show. And it can be non-business related, right? So like, it doesn't have to be like sales is the most important thing, or systems, or like everyone reads Traction, which everyone fucking does. But like, what would you say was like something personally that you've changed maybe in the last, because it's been like 2 years almost since we started this thing.
I think to the extent of, I never realized how open people would be to just reaching out. Like, mm-hmm. I think it sounds simple. It's like, oh, cold email people, but like, no, it really works. We've made friends off of like the podcast, off of Twitter and all these other platforms. So I don't know. I think it's something I probably knew before, but it kind of forced us to actually get into it and start doing it. And now it's like, I have zero hesitation of reaching out to some random person if they're doing anything interesting and being like, hey, let's get a drink or dinner or hop on the phone quick. Yeah. So I think especially during COVID when everyone was kind of locked down, you know, it was like, okay, now you're going to reach out to people. But now even after, it's just, all right, someone's like, this person's doing something interesting and I'm in the city, I'm just going to shoot them a message and see what happens.
Yeah. 100%. I had two. I had two that I thought were pretty good. One is that it's definitely made me a way better like conversationalist outside of podcast mediums. And I don't think it's fake either. I just feel like I'm way better at like just diving in and asking questions about people, to like about themselves. Whereas like before, like, you know that feeling where like, you know nothing about what somebody does. And so like, you're like, I don't even know what the right question is to ask. And I might be asking all of the wrong and dumb questions. That was me like 2 years ago. Now I don't ask the best questions in the world, but I know like way more of like how to get them to share the important details without me necessarily needing to know the important details to phrase the question properly.
I have realized that I do need to turn down maybe to some extent the podcast one, because I did go on a date once. Yeah. And the girl asked me if she's like, oh, that sounds like a podcast question. And I was like, shit.
No, then you just turn to her.
It's one that I've
used. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. That's fair. All right. But I will say, okay, on that note a little bit too, I will say, and I think this is true, I think you might slightly disagree with me on this, but what I've noticed from other people who produce a lot of content, whether it's podcasts, newsletters, tweets, whatever, is, here's what I wrote down. I said, it's probably confirmation bias, but a not interesting person who is great at articulating their ideas, because like they've spent a ton of hours like articulating them to try to get engagement via newsletters, podcasts, YouTube, whatever, to me is much more interesting than somebody who's actually interesting, somebody who's actually doing really cool work, building a business that I would be really interested in, whatever, but does not know how to go and talk about themselves.
I feel like, I don't know, that's kind of a tough one. Like I feel like we come across a lot of people that can do well with media and change it, but to some extent, like I feel like I do want actual context or like a foundation there of something interesting to talk about.
Well, and so this brings me to my second personal lesson of running this show, is like, just don't judge a book by its cover. It's such a cliche saying, but like I kind of regret, like we've definitely brought people on before that I thought were gonna be killer guests, and they were just like Twitter jockeys. Like they just like knew how to go and say like a good headline, right? And like anyone who says, hey, we did seven figures, like what that means is you sold $1 million and $1 worth of products. And like, you might've lost money by doing that. Right. So like, that's one thing that I slightly regret. But on the note of like the interesting people versus like knows how to present themselves to be interesting, like the two examples that come to mind, one we just already kind of talked about was like, Cody Davis, I think, is doing some of the coolest shit of all of the people that we've chatted with. Like the kid is just seller financing literally hundreds of units of apartment buildings at such a young age, and like doing it the right way, I believe. And I actually think, for what it's worth, like, he's been on Bigger Pockets since our podcast. I think he's gotten better.
I would say over the past year, I think he's put a lot more content out now. Like I think he's starting to develop that skill in terms of hyping it up a little bit and kind of, putting the spin on it.
He's much better at it now. So I don't want to like shit on him in that sense. I think he's gotten better. But in my mind, his story when we first told it was not that interesting, despite me knowing how interesting it was. And then we bring on somebody else, like Sophie, the girl on Instagram is like Lattes and Leases. And she's got like, I don't know, I think she has like 12 single family residential homes. And like, I don't want to knock it at all. She's doing cool shit. Like everyone that we actually published an episode of, I believe, is doing cool shit. The only difference is like, I think Cody's story, like on paper, is way better. I think that her podcast episode was so much more interesting because she knew how to go and talk about her stuff.
Right.
She knew how to sell the dream of like being able to travel to Mexico City while like she's has her team closing, or like how she met somebody in a coffee shop, or she met somebody on Tinder who sent her like a deal. Like she knows how to go and tell these stories, which makes her more interesting.
I think we had one guest that was perfect on both of those fronts, in terms of making the content really interesting, but also really, really interesting things to talk about. Do you know who I'm thinking of?
Obvious.
Cody Sanchez.
Oh, she crushes. She's so good.
She came with, like, it was the first time. It almost somehow felt like she had prepped for years to answer the questions that we had, because she makes a lot of content, so she probably has answered them specifically. But like, to the extent of asking a question and then having her come out with her four pillars, or like, it was very impressive and just very well done. So I think there's a clear indication that she knows how to put really interesting content together, and then also has the backfill of the foundation actually put interesting content inside of that bucket.
She has a big journalism background too, which I feel like helps. I think, but like this would be my point in that I think that like even let's take this from a maybe relatable standpoint. If you don't want to go and start a business, if you're interviewing for a job and one person, like you and one other applicant both go and get the interview, and the other applicant on paper on their resume looks way more qualified than you, but you are so good at articulating your story and know exactly how to go and overcome any objectives, talk about how you added value to the firm, like whatever it is that you exactly did, I would bet, and the other person does not have that skill, let's assume, I would bet that you would get the job even if you look less qualified. So I don't know, in my mind, like I kind of hate all of like the nonsense that gets pushed out there these days around like, oh, the power of storytelling is unmatched, and like if you want to develop one skill, it's storytelling. Like, oh my god, cringe. Like that's so terrible. But they're right. And so like actually practice it, and like putting out content around like the interesting projects or things that you are doing, even if nobody's reading them today, it'll make you better at it for the situations when it does matter.
Coming out so many episodes, great. I think we've learned a lot, but what I've noticed is it's become difficult to like sit down and go over like, all right, how did this episode go? What did we cover? What could we do differently? What could we change? And even from like a personal perspective, I would find it fascinating if there's a service. I was like, all right, we'll listen to so many episodes or whatever. Here's constructive feedback. You say these types of words a lot, or you frame your questions incorrectly. And I think we focused on that a little bit in the beginning, and I think it actually did help significantly. It would just be cool if we had a way to consistently tailor that, because, you know, I think you and I both know there's a lot we could be doing with the podcast, but I think the reason we've been able to consistently do it so long is because we don't make absolutely absurd goals of coming out with, you know, 5 episodes a week and going through each one individually and coming up with our own comments, et cetera. We're going to come out with one a week. That is our, you know, consistent goal there. I just wish there was a way to somewhat get constructive feedback on the other end.
What, this is probably a good transition to like go to this question. What do you think that we should change about the show going forward? Is that like just getting
feedback? No, I think it's just difficult because I think there's so much we could be doing, but it becomes a time, money, effort type of question, right? Like there's other things that we love doing that, you know, we don't really make money on the show. It's more of kind of a, not side project, but it's not our day to day. I think we can
become a side project. Like there's at zero point, or if the busiest and most time we will ever spend on this show in a given week is 5 hours. And usually that means that we've recorded 4 episodes that week.
Right. I think like we could be doing really well on TikTok and some other platforms. We've had listeners and friends that have like made clips for us and stuff, and they do really well. So I think like, what could we be doing differently? I think more, some more thoughtful reflection on what works well and what doesn't work in episodes. Like I was saying before, you know, I think that would require us to listen to more past episodes and, you know, maybe really dive into them, and then expanding out on other social platforms that I think would significantly propel the audience, and people that find us would be my two.
So I agree on all of that. Does that really change the show? Like, I think that changes like how we market the show. Would you
change? No, I do think in terms of like having guests on and finding, I think there's potentially more thoughtful ways of structuring episodes or coming up with questions beforehand or some of the research we're doing. I just feel like there's always a better way to do something, and we've never really sat down and spent hours and hours just thinking about what went wrong and what could we improve on past episodes.
In my mind, here's what I wrote down. I said, I don't want to bring on any new guests that we haven't vetted yet. And I think that's kind of extreme, but like, I hate recording episodes where the person seems interesting and they're not, and then we don't air it. Yep. I'm like, great, I just wasted an hour of my life, never getting that back. Two, I think it makes for more interesting content. Like there's probably 10 people that like we're just friends with that we've recorded with over the past 2 years who like we, let's just say that we literally just put them into a rotation of like every 10 weeks they come back on. I bet that would make for incredibly interesting content if we just like shoot the shit and riff on that kind of stuff. And then like occasionally we bring in some new people after like if I go and get coffee with someone and I'm like, you are so interesting, let's bring you on the podcast and just talk about nonsense for an hour. That would be a really entertaining episode. And then the only thing that I wish you and I could be better at, but we can't because I talk with you more than I talk with my parents, is like getting on an episode and talking about like what we found interesting or what we're doing that week. But like, it's so tough because you and I pretty much already know everything that we're doing for that week and like the interesting stuff that we're finding. So it's not really like we'd have to like literally go out of our way to keep a backlog of stuff. I was saying, I'm not going to send this to Gio until Tuesday or Wednesday when we actually record. And then I'll bring it up on air and see if he finds it interesting then.
Yeah, but I bet we could probably, you could probably just go through our text messages and develop an entire episode of like, oh, remember this thing I sent you? Like,
yeah.
And go on it.
That's fair. So like from, in my mind, this also goes into my next question a little bit of like, and so this is like, my thought would be, okay, no new guests, like vet the guests that we have and like try to do more just you and I episodes because those are so low lift. We don't have to worry about scheduling and all of that kind of stuff. But the whole point of the podcast for me also is like just meet new people. So I don't want to totally eliminate that point. I would just want to like find a way to go into it maybe slightly differently. This change brings me to my next question though, of like, do you think that we'll hit 200 episodes? And like, my thought on that is like, only if we change the format. I don't think we should keep on doing the same format for the next 100 episodes. I personally will get so bored with it that I'll probably want to go and do something else.
I think we've had success in the past just doing like brainstorming episodes with pulling out interesting people. And to your point, kind of just shooting the shit of like, this is interesting. How would you expand this business? So I think branching out into that would make it, I think kind of provide new light on it. I think those are also a lot of fun because it kind of allows you to take a more creative perspective on it. Yeah. I think my ideal, like it would be cool to just have like a huge podcast studio type of thing where everyone could hang out and kind of sit down, like, I don't know, the cliche ones that you see online everywhere.
So with the declining sale of alcohol, what if we just replace bars with podcast hangout studios? Like, it seems like such a good idea.
Hey guys, here's your microphone. Here's a bunch of random people. Here's your topic to talk about.
Just know that everything you say can and will be recorded and used against you in the court of law.
I would say like the 200 episode part. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think to your perspective, I think we'll need to do something new or figure out a way to kind of keep it interesting. It's definitely cool to see though, for the most part, the more episodes we come out with, the more people listen, the more people that follow us. Like it is a lot of fun to see the consistent kind of growth and success there.
Agreed. The only downside about podcasts too, for a lot of it, is like tweets and newsletters, you get a lot of feedback. Podcasts, you get no feedback. Absolutely.
That's
no
what I'm
feedback.
Saying. Like we have at this point, what, just 100 hours?
Like what's absurd is that I get like text messages and screenshots and the occasional Twitter DM, and like you see like the number of plays per episode based on like the publisher. So like people are listening. That's dope. But like, here's the thing, like I want to rename the podcast. I don't think that the next generation really covers what we do anymore. And so in my mind now, like, is that like, if we rename the podcast, does that fuck everything up? Do people even care about the name anymore? And do they correlate it with like young entrepreneurs? I don't know.
But I think that maybe goes into a whole if we should rename
it, please, for the love of God. Like, we get no feedback. Like, I need something.
Just general feedback. I think on that note though, I think that potentially branches off into other stuff we've slightly discussed or at least thought about in the past of like, how do you build a bigger community around the things you're doing, right? Like this kind of started off as a community building exercise to some extent. I was like, hey, let's find interesting people. Let's talk with them. Let's build our network. So, you know, what are the sort of avenues and branches you go off of that? You can go in every direction. But it's like building a network of interesting people that talk about cool things to some extent.
Would you split a content associate with me? Salary wise,
what does a content associate mean?
I got lunch with, do you know who Ben Bradbury is?
Sounds familiar, maybe.
He was the head of audio, now he's like the head of content over at Workweek. And you know, Workweek, right? The all the guys like the yellow circles, they have like, all right, for anyone who doesn't know Workweek, basically they are a media company, but they believe that like individuals are more powerful than media brands. And so as a result, they basically try to go and like put individual media creators, people who like have their own opinions through newsletters, podcasts, social media, whatever, put them on payroll, take a commission of like any ad sales that they can go and push through their podcast or newsletter networks and help them like give them the operating infrastructure to like sell products and host their events, things like that. Anyway, he was saying he like, we just chatted for like 2 hours and like he just, every time I had leave a conversation with like him or Ben Levy or like Austin Reef, like I'm just so sold that like, if you want to like do anything in business these days, you should put out substantially more content because it makes every part of your business, whether it's deal flow, hiring, raising money, whatever it is, substantially easier. And so what I'm starting to think about, and I was talking with Ben about over the weekend, is like, should I just see if I can hire somebody for like, I don't know what the salary would be. Yeah, I can't pay a lot right now for a content, like just ethically in my mind, for somebody to help me like write my newsletter or like make TikTok videos, I can't pay that much. But if anyone listening to this right now wants experience, I think like $40,000 a year is a reasonable thing for a full-time role or like-
but that's the tough part with content, right? Is like, it's so difficult to, like if there was a clear ROI on the 40 grand, it would be a no-brainer, right? Content's so difficult because you have to throw stuff at a wall consistently. And then it's like, okay, now it's all paying off in the end.
But it works. It works. Yeah, you just have to trust it. And like at this point, I feel like I've been in marketing for long enough that like content works. It just does. But like I'm having a tough time like making the bet on it from a personal standpoint where like I'm not even trying to sell anything to anyone. I just want to go and like grow the content stuff because I'm a firm believer that more opportunities will become available. And like that will be my opportunity, right? Like the ability to co-invest or find deal flow or whatever. Like that's my endpoint. If I had like a course, oh dude, I would be doing this like every single day of the week. But honestly, I just don't ever want to be in the course business. Just not my MO. No hate on it. Just don't want to do it. And so yeah,
we don't have an instant turnaround of like, okay, if we had a million listeners or downloads tomorrow, what is our financial benefit from there? It's zero for the most part.
But what's cool about our stuff at the very least is like, okay, let's say it leads to like one investor or like one new deal. Great. Pays for 10 years of content, right?
Which I would say it already has. Like we've made phenomenal connections and deals and all of that. Like we've paid off at the podcast, at least in my mind,
1,000 times
already.
Over. I agree.
Right.
So yeah. So in my mind right now, I'm thinking about hiring like a personal person for like 20 hours a week. And my expectation, what I don't want to have happen is all of my content becomes not written by me. Cause then it becomes so disingenuous. And like, I hate that so much. So I would still write everything. They would just be responsible for like helping with the distribution, maybe tweaking formatting, maybe proofreading, maybe like doing whatever. Cause in my mind, like if that's a system that's set up, great. I can like just spend like a couple hours a week doing some content stuff. But like the bulk of it for me, I just want to always be business all the time. But I'm getting more and more convinced that there is a solid blend between creator and business owner that like people can really benefit off of.
It is crazy how much money some of the higher end content people pay. Like, I don't know if you follow Ryan Pineda or like a couple of the other real estate guys that are really, really content focused.
Yeah.
I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but they'll go over like how much they're spending on a monthly basis in terms of film crew and editing. And probably 5 or 6 figures a month just in cost.
Well, I was going to say, I know Hormozy and his wife, I think, spend $700,000 a year on content.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So I'll counter that. I would say yes, but I want like a content studio. I don't know.
Where?
I'm not saying
where are you going to be?
Well, just buy a house out of Austin when the market crashes enough.
Maybe.
The podcast house.
Maybe.
Or an old industrial building in Brooklyn. Do the inverse storage conversion, get a storage building, deconvert it.
Yeah, but then I have to go over to Brooklyn all the time. No, maybe. I'm not opposed to it. But anyway, this is most of what I have for the 100th episode. I think this is a pretty good episode. Do you have anything else?
I mean, I got like a million questions written down and I think we could talk about this indefinitely and we probably should make it a 5-hour episode. On that note though, but like, I think absolutely hit us back with feedback or anything you guys would like to see. Like we do get Twitter DMs or Instagram messages and stuff every once in a while. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's like when you see your product out in the wild to some extent. If there's topics you guys want to hear about, things you like, you dislike, let us know and leave a review.
I think I'm going to hire a content person. And so also if you want to like dabble in that, let me know.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.